listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, a new instant tax deduction on the cards. Petrol prices ease, but it comes with an inflation warning. Details next. Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Monday, the 20th of April 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, the S&P ASX 200 up 0.1%. We'll have the details with Evan Lucas in a few moments. Plus, we'll go through the government's new $1,000 income tax deduction scheme. But first to the markets, where the 200 rose 0.1% to 8,953. Consumer discretionary and consumer staple stocks did best. That's as UBS raised its earnings estimates for the supermarket companies. The banks were mixed. NAB dropped 3.6% after it increased bad debt provisions to protect itself from borrowers impacted by the Iran war. Energy stocks fell the most. That's as Brent crude seesawed at the weekend. And that's after the on-off-again access to the Strait of Hormuz. But it's still below $100 a barrel. The Australian Institute of Petroleum says the national average for a litre of unleaded fell 11.6 cents last week to around 212.9 cents. And while it's trending down, Westpac says total fuel spend is still 16% higher than a year ago. Some analysts say the impact on the consumer will stretch into the future. And for more on that and the broader share market, I spoke with market analyst Evan Lucas. Evan, so given the volatility in the market at the moment, how would you describe investor sentiment?
Remarkably resilient, I think is probably the word, Ricardo. I mean, Australia is not and hasn't fully recovered the losses from what happened from the 28th of February with the Iran war and what have you, but the US more than and certainly has. Their volatility index is sitting about 17. Our volatility index is sitting roughly about the same. It's a little bit higher than that, but not by much. If you look at a historical 10-year average, that's about where they normally sit. Now, admittedly, last year was a very low volatile year. So, yes, people will point out the volatility index is up 20-odd percent since the start of this year. But that was coming from an incredibly low base, and we were probably due for a bit of vol in terms of where it is. But considering how much of an economic impactor this is, and let's be honest, it is a ginormous impactor. The reason it's been referred to as COVID 2.0 is well and truly justified. The one I'm really watching forward going forward is the impact it has on construction, like how much, you know, cost of things like concrete, things like steel, you know, fabricated products, etc., most of which come overseas in this country, hasn't come through yet, but we are pretty much going, it's going to get resolved. The volatility is probably okay. It's not out of this world. And everything puts me back into sort of a slightly happier place, which, again, my caveat is this. I don't think we are fully recognizing just how big a disruption this will be, not just now, but more importantly, midway through the year, as the cost of transport gets factored into price and therefore the delivery of product that comes and therefore forward contracts get impacted by that. I mean, you look, again, let's go back to construction. You look at the moment, fixed contracting in construction work is so opaque. They're almost basically saying we can't do it. Like we just cannot contract. We cannot price. That's more my dilemma. So the volatility is lower than expected right now. The resilience is quite impressive. It does also worry me though that they're not forward sort of pricing what happened in 2020 where we got big fluctuations, inflation problems in 22 and 23. Is not in people's memory considering how close it's been to 2020.
As you mentioned, shares in the US are basically back at record highs, right?
Yep.
Here, the ASX 200, we're only about 3% off those records. So to what extent do you think investors are getting ahead of themselves? Because from some of the people that I've spoken to, they're saying, well, hey, Donald Trump needs to get this sorted, especially ahead of the midterms later this year. But what you're saying is, hey, let's look at the secondary effects that's still to come.
Yeah, yeah. Whether he was to finish the war tomorrow or whenever it looks like, I mean, again, looking at the perspectives that we have, it is very hard to model what the outcome will be out of the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, the weekend is a great example of again, Friday night suggesting the Strait is fully open. The weekend, clearly it isn't. Both sides of the conflict are clearly firing on each other, and excuse the pun on that one. So you can't model that. So even if it was finishing tomorrow, the impacts and the crisis that has happened over the last six and a bit weeks has to filter through, right? So you look at places like China, they've been having a big hit in cost increases from the issues around crude. You look at most of Asia where we are based, all of that's there. I mean, the majority of our concrete in this country comes from China, and that cost is therefore going to be passed through. The majority of our fabricated steel and steel products comes from that part of the region as well. So that price is going to get factored through. You cannot argue that the fact that, you know, if you look at diesel pricing across the globe, it is significantly higher than petroleum products. So that's my first point in terms of where it is. The second one is, what does the war outcome look like? So again, even let's say it is resolved tomorrow, it is not going to be the perfect reopening of the Strait and a scenario where free flow of trade is happening anytime soon. And again, that puts cost into it. It puts risk. I mean, the one that goes to my head immediately, Ricardo, is you still look at things like insurance, despite the fact the president has said that the US government will actually insure ships. Insurance of those transport costs are through the roof. That's another inflation prospect that has to start getting factored in as insurance premiums. And it goes global, because it hits into the reinsurance markets and so on and so forth. So for me, it is the indirect cost, because the indirect impact of this is what, you know, in inflation terms, stickiness of it. It takes months to filter through, and they are coming like a freight train.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
You're listening to my interview with market analyst Evan Lucas. What about the impact on the consumer and on businesses right now as we start to head into a reporting season, right? We know that the oil price has been quite volatile this weekend. You know, it's come down when the Strait was reopened. It's jumped back up when the Strait was closed. We're still seeing petrol prices come off their recent highs, though, so they're not as bad as they once were before. But what does it mean for the consumer and for these businesses right now? I think we heard from NAB today, for example, increasing potential buffers to protect it from struggling borrowers. How's all this going to play out?
Yeah, so, wow, okay, huge question. There's lots of stuff in there. First and foremost, I want to go into the middle part of that about the initial jump in fuel pricing, right? So it was very clear that highly sensitive industries into fuel, agriculture's case in point, were stockpiling during the start of this. They saw it coming, they knew what to do, and they stockpiled. So we got that initial jump and that initial spike. You can't argue we've had a 30% jump. I mean, if you look pre-February, there was pricing in, you know, 91 petroleum products at about $1.55, $1.56 a litre, and we're now talking about, you know, happy days, we're back into $2.06 sort of handle. I mean, that is not going away, and that's despite the fact that government's obviously cut the fuel excise, and we're now currently sitting at 26.5 cents lower than what it was because of that. So that's the first thing to be aware of. We've had the initial shock and the initial stockpiling. Farmers have clearly bumped away where they should, and absolutely, I completely understand why they've done it, and should. Agriculture is the backbone of this country. So that initial shock is done. However, going back to the other parts of your point here, you look at what NAB's doing. NAB's obviously just following on from what ANZ did last week as well, which is that, again, the sensitivity industries are clear. Mining, absolutely fully exposed to this problem. I mean, they are the largest consumers in this country of diesel products, along with agriculture. So sooner or later, that price increase is going to kick through, and the probability that those exploration firms or the firms that are still going through, you know, the upcycle of a normal sort of period of actually bringing a mine onto site. They're the ones most exposed to this. They're the ones more likely to have syndicated debt rather than actually going through the market. No surprise at all that, you know, banks are going to have to absorb this. Then the final part of the whole discussion point is that the risk from the market and the risk from this all being baked in is, I think, at the moment still not fully factored to just how long and prolonged this will be. And then it brings the inflation story to the consumer. The consumer is already having a confidence level that is lower than records ever began. If you want to look at ANZ, pretty much at record all-time lows with regards to the Westpac consumer confidence. And they know that they're going to get a price increase. They just know it. So they're already on strike with buying. The consumer, therefore, don't forget, makes up 60 to 65% of our GDP in this country. And already they have clearly made a psychological impacted decision around future expectations. So for me, the consumer has seen everything that I've just talked about and gone, oh, everything that I'm going to buy is going to get more expensive. I need to start battening down the hatches now so that when that price increase comes along, I can somewhat absorb it. But that means making choice, and it is choice, that is hard now just so I can survive the future. That's a real big concern.
And speaking of now, right, so we're seeing that petrol price come down. The Australian Institute of Petroleum said it's down to 212.9 cents per litre. That's the national average for unleaded. Mm-hmm. Do you think that petrol's going to have that two handle for a while now?
Yeah, I can't see. So the rule of thumb, and again, it is a fairly loose rule of thumb with regards to pricing, is that for every $10 increase in crude price, you see roughly about 10 to 15 cents per litre price. So, you know, if you go back to when we were doing $1.55 to $1.60 at the start of the year, crude was in the 60 handle, 60, you know, mid 60, early, touching 70s. We're at 96 if we're lucky, right? So it's got as low as $92 a barrel. You're going to have to see a significant drop to the 80s to start seeing maybe a one, so, you know, $1.99, $1.90 something, for it to get back into that level. That's the, as I said, the very rough rule of thumb. Nothing is suggesting that's going to happen anytime soon. Yes, we've probably got a bit more of a stability there. Yes, we're starting to see other things pick up the slack, which is great. The initial shock, as I said, is probably done. So that initial surge in demand that drove it really through the roof is probably out of the action. But again, the caveat is this: who knows what the president could do? Who knows what the Iranians might do? And a fifth of the oil market is still somewhat, if not fully, out of action. That isn't changing anytime soon either. So the $2 handle is unfortunately here to stay for the foreseeable future.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
That's market analyst Evan Lucas there. Okay, let's go to some tax news now. And more than 6 million workers will be able to instantly deduct $1,000 from their taxable income without providing receipts, but they won't see the benefits until the second half of next year. The government says the average tax saving will be $205 as a result. Most will be women, although their average saving will be a little less than the overall amount. Or those on lower incomes, say below $100,000, will see an average $195 benefit. For more on this and how this will all work, I spoke with Mark Chapman, Head of Taxation Communications at H&R Block.
It's essentially a standard deduction which covers work-related expenses. So from the 1st of July 2026, eligible taxpayers will be able to choose to automatically claim a $1,000 deduction instead of listing their individual work-related expenses. So the key point is that it's optional. So you either take the $1,000 shortcut where you claim your actual expenses in the usual way, you know, using keeping full substantiation. The theory is that it's designed to simplify tax time, particularly for people with relatively low work-related expenses. So if you don't have, for example, any work-related expenses, or they're very low, $100, $200, you can still claim the full $1,000, which is a quite a valuable addition to the tax cutting armory.
Okay, so can you throw out your receipts then if you are using this method?
Well, not necessarily, because you potentially need your receipts, because you won't actually know whether you've actually claimed, whether you actually incurred more than $1,000 or not until you get to the end of the tax year. So basically until you reach the 30th of June 2027. It'd be a very unfortunate situation if you did get to the 30th of June 2027 and you suddenly realised that you'd actually spent $2,000 on work-related expenses and you hadn't kept any receipts, because you'd then only be able to claim the $1,000. So you do actually need to keep your receipts, in spite of what the legislation says, in order to make an educated judgment as to whether to claim the $1,000 or whether to do it the old-fashioned way and claim the actual expenses.
So what are some of the more common misconceptions about those receipt deductions?
Well, I think in terms of the $1,000 instant tax deduction, probably the biggest misconception is that it's a $1,000 tax refund or a cash payment or something like that. It isn't. It's a deduction and not a refund. So the actual benefit that you receive depends on your tax rate. So for most people, the tax saving will actually be closer to $200 to $300, not $1,000. And the maximum tax saving will be around $470. But as, you know, as I say, most taxpayers are paying tax at a much lower rate than that, so they will receive less. So it isn't $1,000 cash payment, it isn't $1,000 tax refund.
Now, the government says the average tax saving will be over $205, or around $205. But would it be fair to say that higher income earners will save more money?
Yes. Provided that they only, provided they're high income earners with low value deductions. You know, this really only makes sense if the value of the actual expenses that you incurred was less than $1,000. You know, if you've got, if you're say a public servant who's earning $200,000 or $300,000, that might possibly apply, but it typically won't apply, because if you're potentially earning a lot, then you might well be spending a lot. You might be going on courses, you might be spending a lot on work-related clothing, etc. So you just got to be careful to check the actual value of your work-related expenses before deciding which method to use, and that is often not connected to the amount of income that you're actually earning.
It's Mark Chapman there from H&R Block, and he wraps up the podcast for this Monday. Give it a like, a review, and subscribe if you enjoy it. And don't forget to watch On the Money during SBS World News, the 6:30 weekday edition of the program on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday. I'll catch you then. This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Hi. Hi, it's Noor Haider, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we bring you a single story, going beyond the headlines and taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Combining personal storytelling with analysis, we take you inside the stories that matter most. For fearless, independent reporting that holds power to account, listen to Full Story from The Guardian, wherever you get your podcasts.